Hello and welcome to the United Stand podcast. I'm joined by Flex. How you doing, pal?
What's happening? I did a little Goldbridge intro on the Flex and Rancher. I don't know if you saw it, taking the mick out of you, but that was nice.
I think my eyes just got switched off by that shitty fucking that logo that appeared.
Oh, you're saying that, mate. You want to check the comments, mate. Everyone says love the logo. So depends on your taste.
Depends on whether you go through the head of design in Draughty, don't you? That's the problem that Josh has made.
Put the poll out there. Does the logo stay or does it go?
Go. Thanks everyone who's been smashing the ratings on iTunes and all the other things as well, and the reviews. Really appreciate that, so keep doing that. But let's fly into it. Lots to discuss. Want to talk about the January transfer window, De Gea injury, the Liverpool game, a little bit about the racism stuff towards the end, Solskjaer, and I want to start off very, very quickly about Marcus Rashford, because I saw some stuff after the England game where he scored a goal, and there was a lot of people on social media saying, look at this is another reason to get rid of Solskjaer, get Solskjaer out, he's holding Rashford back, he plays well for Southgate and then he's shit for England, shit for United. I tell you what, I'll let you go on this, Flex. I mean, I'm not in the best mood today anyway, but reality is, I think you know, piss off to those United fans who think that. They're absolutely clueless.
That's like Marcus Rashford's been playing a worldie. Like, that goal at face value is good how he cut in. Don't get me wrong, he's done that. Yeah. And the keeper should do better if you're actually being, like, mad critical. Like, he should. It's not actually top corner or anything. He's just belted it. Which, to be fair, that's not that uncharacteristic for Marcus Rashford.
He's got attackers from there. Yeah, that's his sort of
position. You know what I mean? To pop up once every 10, 15 games. He hasn't scored a goal like that since Liverpool last year.
Most defenders know not to give him that space there. I mean, you're playing against Bulgaria, who are basically the equivalent of Crawley Town.
There you go. So there's no way I'm looking at that thinking, see, oh, look at Rashford. Like, it's not like Rashford goes, half the time he ain't even been in starting. Do you know what I mean? So to think that is, it's just bollocks, man. Like, we've got issues within our whole front line. So realistically, I think if we're being completely honest, none of us can really say, this person should play here and that person, apart from maybe Martial up front. Like, other than that, the jury's out on all of them. So, and we haven't been scoring or creating. So, I don't really care where Rashford plays, either on the left or on the right. He's not obviously doing well through the middle at the moment. When Martial comes back, that should be his spot, at least to see how that pans out. Daniel James obviously started off really well in that left-hand side, on that left-hand side. And we said, obviously, we're not expecting him to do that every game. He got, like, what, 3 goals in his first 4 games and hasn't scored since. But we're not criticising him for that. That's the level where Daniel James should be, you know, being inconsistent, not having that much pressure on him. It's a young kid coming from the Championship. So, you know, if Marcus Rashford has to go back to the left to try it out, try it out. If he has to go to the right, we have to do something, because we got nothing. So I'm not really buying that whole, oh, look, he's playing for England now, it's all Solskjaer's fault. And rare, that's just bollocks.
It is. And the one thing I would say is that Anthony Martial only played 3 games, but in those 3 games, I saw a very different striker who's making intelligent runs, holding the ball up, and has got good movement around the box. And how has that improved over the summer? It can only be through Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and the fact that, you know, whatever Ollie is, whether he's a director of football, whether he's a bus driver, whatever, or a top coach, we'll find out. But I certainly think that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is probably one of the most intelligent strikers of the Premier League era. And, you know, whether he's a good coach or not, I think he can sit down with a striker like Martial and say, these are the runs you need to be making. This is how you hold the ball up. This is what you need to be doing around the box. And Martial has responded to that. For people to say, oh, Rashford scored a goal against Bulgarian farmers, he's now, you know, Ollie's been holding him back. I'll tell you what's been holding him back. Them bloody lead boots he wears in the penalty box that he doesn't fucking move. Like, I'll tell you what, I will not defend Marcus Rashford, even though I like the lad. There is no culpability on the part of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer with relation to Rashford. I've seen about 20 crosses go into the box this season that a striker would be going for, and Rashford stood there waiting for it to land on his foot. I think he's been abysmal. I think he's terrible. And I think there is no blame towards Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. And I'd also add into this that with regards to these flip-floppers, I mean, a lot of people say flip-flops are a very obvious word to use these days because people aren't allowed to change their opinion, when the reality is, on Sunday, McTominay might have the worst game ever and everyone might go, you know what, he should play for Preston, he's shit, even though everyone's calling him McMayo. That's a change of an opinion based on a fact. flip-flopping, I believe Robbie and AFTV are going to bring a book out for Christmas so you can read it, but but flip-flopping is what you're getting with Rashford. Everyone says he's shit. He scores a goal against some farmers. Oh, he's got a play on the left wing. Oh, Ollie's holding him back. Like, Dan James, our left winger. Dan James is our left winger. He's done nothing wrong. He's just been starved of service. Martial's our striker. So Rashford, you play on the right wing or you sit down on the bench for me, because the last 8 months is what matters, not the fucking 8 seconds against Bulgaria where you scored a half decent goal. So,
but that's what I was saying. What's saving Rashford? What's actually in a team that was firing? Yeah, Rashford wouldn't be anywhere near the starting lineup.
No,
but because we're so shit and we're so disjointed, it's like, well, out of the players that are available, he's the most seasoned pro out of all of them, and you're just waiting for that moment. You're waiting for him to score a goal, waiting for something to happen, because you've got to put some faith in him, because what else have we got? And obviously there's the Mason Greenwood story, which there's no point keep going on about it.
No.
Ollie doesn't fancy him. There's no point in terms of starting him in the games and in the Premier League. He doesn't fancy him, because we've seen it many a times. He'd rather run Rashford into the ground. And look, whether Rashford's going to get any better or not in a better squad, like if Rashford was in a squad that was fully functioning, yeah, we'll get more out of him, but I don't think he will ever be mad consistent 25 goals. I don't see that clinical player in there. I don't. And I think the only reason, if Marcus Rashford was 26, 27 and still like this, we wouldn't be having these conversations. We're only having these conversations because he is in real life terms actually still quite young, but not in terms of appearances and experienced player. He's not that young anymore. Even Jose said it, he's not that young. He's been there, what, this is his fifth season, isn't it? Fifth season at like starter. Do you know what I mean? Let's face it, most of the managers have started Rashford.
I think with Rashford as well is Martial, Pogba, even Dan James. I think no matter who the opposition is, I think that they've got a trick in them or something that can put them on the back foot. I think with Rashford, I'm not saying he's not going to become a good player. There's still time. There's still time. But the player he is over the last sort of year, he's too easy to play against. I'm not saying he won't score goals. He scored a goal on Tuesday night or Monday night. Yeah. If you give him space anywhere, he might score a goal because he's got a trick in him and he's quick. Yeah. But if you defend against him in the right way, i.e. show him down the left-hand side because he's not really got a left foot, i.e. don't play a high line so he can exploit the pace and the space, i.e.
nullify him,
i.e. you know, like most teams do with United, when United have got the ball, just get everyone behind the ball. Just if you deprive United of space to run into, then you kill Marcus Rashford and most of our team.
Especially if he's playing as a nine. If he's playing as a nine, he's probably the easiest nine to play against
ever. His first touch is terrible. Keep him back to goal.
Do you know what I mean? Keep him back to goal and then he's not going to hurt you, you know? And you could exploit him because he's not that hold-up player. He's not that focal point of an attack. He's not.
He'd do well for like an Everton or a Bournemouth because they're teams that are going to defend a lot and then hit on the break. And I think Rashford in a team like that is a threat. But how many teams, you know, nobody's doing it now. Everyone knows United from the Chelsea game. If you let them hit the on the break, that's where they're dangerous. If you don't, they ain't got anything.
Exactly that. And that is the bigger problem with us, is that we're so easy to play against. No team's scared of us. Why should they be scared of us? You can't even blame these teams for you know, let's face it, showing us no respect, because we are easy to play against and predictable to play against, you know. So it does affect individual players. It does, because I think it's a very difficult environment to break through in for two reasons. Because one, that you can have a little bit of a good time and you're propelled into stardom. There's that side, like a McTominay sort of thing. It's like a couple of positive performances, but you're going up against Matic, who's just stale and terrible. It makes you look like the best thing since goals, or the best thing since fucking, do you know what I mean? Darren Fletcher in that position. It might make it look like that. But then the second thing is that they're so bad that you don't develop well. Do you know what I mean? Like you pick up crap habits, you pick up losing, you pick up a lack of development, you pick up bad habits, you pick up bad morale, and it stunts your growth as a player. So
I think we're already seeing that with Wan-Bissaka, Dan James and Maguire, actually.
There you go.
You know, new signings come in, and then they start to get used to their surroundings, and those surroundings are inconsistency, you know, spineless performances. So
there you go.
You are what you become, aren't you?
Exactly. That Man United winning and doing well and front foot, creating loads of chances, putting opponents to the sword, camping opponents in their final third. They don't know that. They don't know. They were doing that more at Maguire was doing that more at Leicester. Maguire was doing that more at Leicester, seeing his team dominate, seeing his team on a counter, seeing his teams get countless opportunities, Vardy on the end of things. Do you know what I mean? Tillemans creating, or Didi breaking up play, and then we go from there. Chilwell bombing on.
He's in a worse team.
He is. So you're right. And then it only lasts, like, the first game against Chelsea was a bit of a breath of fresh air, because we were like, I remember everyone was cheering everything Maguire done, up to like basic headers, Mark, like a normal clearance, because we're like, this is just what a normal centre half should do. But as the results have kept turning, like, some people have even said, poor, he hasn't even been that great at the minute. Like, they're saying it.
Yeah.
You know?
I want to talk about this January transfer window, but let's mention Liverpool, because, you know, De Gea may not play. I mean,
yeah, it's bonkers.
I mean, it's a bit of a blow, but regards to whether he plays or not, what's your feeling about this Liverpool game? Because I think, you know, we spoke last week about whether Solskjaer would be sacked if we lost. I think we both agreed that he wouldn't be.
He's not going to get sacked. No.
I think Liverpool are in a strong position, obviously. But they don't have to come and beat us 4 or 5 nil. I mean, if I was Liverpool, I'd be like, you know what? Most important thing is we win. Like, first 20 minutes, just see what United are going to do. Don't go gung-ho against them. Just see what United are going to do. Certainly get the crowd quiet.
Because the
crowd will be up for it. So first 20 minutes, United are boring. Let's be boring for 20 minutes. We know for the last 70 minutes, we can go through many different gears. We've got many different options. Do you see United coming out of this with anything?
I don't. I think, look, let me just put this out there. First of all, it's a derby game, isn't it? It's a derby match. So this is like the role reversal of where Liverpool used to be poor for so many years and we were a way better team than them. Way better team than them. But come derby day, when we go to Anfield, we could lose. We could draw.
Yeah.
So, look, it's a derby game. I don't think we can win. I think we could get a draw on the basis that it's a derby game. And you never know. Liverpool could randomly have an off day and we could scum a draw. You never know. In reality, in form, in how we are at the moment and how Liverpool are, I cannot see anything other than a Liverpool win. Because not only are we in poor form, I look at the team now and it doesn't actually look like a team that would be able to muster it up. I know in football you can never say never, which is why I said the beginning bit, because you can never say never, but I'm 90% sure that team does not have what it takes right now in this moment, the minerals to put in a fight and a stifle and make Liverpool be on the back foot. I don't see it. I think, look, Liverpool haven't been at their sparkling best their last couple of games. All right, fair play, I understand that. You know, they got that win at Sheffield United, which that should have really been a 0-0. They lost against Napoli. I think there was another close game.
Leicester. It was very close.
There's another one, it's very close. So, look, I'm not up their arses. Some people might say, oh, get out their arse, Flex. We're Man United. We can fucking... But in reality, if, you know, you look at how disjointed we're going to be, especially if there's no Wan-Bissaka, Mane could have an absolute field day.
Is he meant to be out then, Wan-Bissaka? I didn't know that.
We don't know. Well, I haven't heard he's definitely back. I'm just saying if he's not, you know, I haven't heard he's back in and he's all right and haven't heard that yet. So until I hear that, then I'm just going to assume he's not. And I just feel Pogba might not be fit, is he? I don't think he will be.
I think this is where people are. I think that United, this is the worst United side we've ever had. So and the midfield is abysmal. So that's a battle we're going to lose, which means our defence is going to be under the cosh for a lot of that game. So also Pogba, Martial, even if they're back, they're not match fit anyway. So I think we're living in a fantasy world. But what I would say is that I've always predicted 0-0 because I think Liverpool have not been able to beat us in the Premier League under Klopp, and I liken it to the Merseyside derby because I think that Everton are always the underdogs in that.
Yeah.
But if you go into it with a team camaraderie, 100% effort and desire and passion and then you have, you know, it's a bit like a cup tie, isn't it? You do see the underdogs get a result. The problem is, do any of us trust this team to go out there with team unity and fight?
I don't trust it, Mark. I don't trust it against Arsenal. That's the after our poor form, that's our first big game at home, like big team. And we did all right in the first half, to be fair. I think Arsenal would have been more disappointed with themselves. We actually did okay. But on the balance of play, we wasn't in the second half. We just kind of faded. But Liverpool's a different animal, man. Liverpool is a different animal. And they will be nervous. Their fans, I mean, some of them, their fans are like, you know, it is still United. It's Old Trafford. And even last year, they should have come and pammed us. And we had three players off by half time, made three subs.
I think they've got to this year, though. You know,
but
that's another,
exactly, if
that's
they want to go win this league. Yeah. But you say, but also on the flip side, Mark, they are, what is it, 8 points clear?
Yeah.
You know, so they've got a bit of a cushion, which could actually relax them as well.
Yeah,
so,
but you know, Klopp's more, way more passionate than
he will be telling them, beat them.
And I would be saying to them, going out, it's the easiest chat ever. You're 8 points clear.
Mm.
If you win at Old Trafford, how many more games this season are losable? You know, like,
exactly.
And also, exactly. If we win at Old Trafford, it's
massive
our year,
marker.
You know,
massive marker. Yeah,
yeah.
And that's what I'm saying. They're not going to come out. I know you were saying about seeing how it is first 15, 20. There might be an element of that, but I think they could even come right out of traps.
They got. Yeah, well, why not? Why not?
High intensity. Man United won't like it. Make the fans sit down in the first 5-10 minutes. Pop shots. Get corners. Pepper them. Press them. I'll be very surprised if we start on the front foot.
I don't think we've got the players to start on the front foot.
I think it'd be very interesting
if they come and play us off the park from minute one. And, you know, not necessarily saying 5-6-7-0, but you can get beat 2-0 and be absolutely never in the game. And I think that would be very interesting. If that 90-minute game turns into what feels like 5 hours because we're just totally and utterly outclassed, I think patience will...
Don't get me wrong, people will be coming out. I mean, look, it's a weird one because nobody expects us to win against Liverpool. So really, when we lose, if we lose, we can't really be like, I cannot believe we've lost at home to Liverpool.
But you know, just to jump in on that, we should expect to beat Liverpool. It's at Old Trafford. I mean, this is what I mean. It's like, I accept that Liverpool are better than us, but like you said, it's a derby. So because it's a derby is a great leveller. Like, I remember United going to play Man City in the 80s and the 90s and we would lose even though we were miles better than them. It is a great leveller, so I think that actually we shouldn't have that mindset of we're going to lose because it's Liverpool, because logically that makes sense, but actually because it's Liverpool at Old Trafford, our biggest game of the season, you know,
but that's where we should be winning it because it should
be enough of a motivator to the players we've got, who are good players, some of them
who are, but then if you think about it, our squad is so, if you take the emotion out of it and look at our players and look at their players, is passion going to be enough to just win that game? I don't believe
But as you said, it has been in the past. I remember Liverpool getting results against us at Anfield when we had like Beckham, Giggs, Scholes, you know, brilliant teams. I remember 99 actually. I think we drew 2-2. Would it be 99? Yeah, I think it was 2-2 in that game. And I think Ince scored an equaliser for Liverpool, and it was like they'd won the trophy. I'm pretty sure it was that year. People will correct me if I'm wrong. But what I'm saying is that Liverpool team was shit, and that United team won a treble. It was brilliant. And even then, it was. I remember that game vividly. I just don't know whether I've got the right season. I hope I have. And it was like, it was so disappointing to even draw it, but it was like, fucking, actually, it's probably not a bad point in the context because they were so up for it, and that's what I mean. I think you're right in some ways, but this is part of the problem, is that any United team should be able to get itself up to a level to beat
and
Liverpool at Old
feel
Trafford.
Like it can.
But
that's the problem.
If we can't, then that speaks volumes.
Yeah, and I think it's true, and that is why I said right at the beginning of this that it is a derby, so technically, you don't know. You know, I get it, the inferior players can win on a day, but I just look in that squad right now in this moment though, Mark, in this moment, and I lean more towards the superiorities, and the confidence is too big an issue right now. I'd love to be proved wrong. Who doesn't want to walk out of Old Trafford obviously with 3 points? Let's not even talk about that. Of course we want to win, and even if we get a draw, it's like that wouldn't be a bad result, which sounds horrible saying, but to avoid defeat in this moment, could I go as far to say it could actually give us a bit of confidence to maybe kick on and try and do something? Potentially. If we beat Liverpool, that's the question I'll pose to you. If we do beat Liverpool, I'm not going to say convincingly or unconvincingly. I'm saying if we just win, forget how it was. Would it breed any confidence, do you think? Or would it just paper over cracks, especially if it was a shit win? Lucky 1-0 penalty, isn't it?
I think the only way we can beat Liverpool, and I said this when I was doing the Redmen yesterday, would be like Leicester, you know, get a penalty, keep a clean sheet, you know, or get a goal like the McTominay goal. You know, I'm sure we'll have a shot, you know, if someone actually gets a good connection. I think it will be 0-0, but I think, you know, if we do,
so you think
win
Liverpool
it,
won't score against us at Old Trafford?
I think that's the only way we get a good result. And I just, I live in this perennial sort of belief that Liverpool at Old Trafford shouldn't be a loss. You know,
no, it shouldn't. Of course, I agree with
whatever.
You.
Whatever. So I'm just going to live in that. You know, people might be surprised because I have, you know, I'm obviously very, very concerned about the situation with United at the moment. But I think 0-0, and I think I would agree with you as well. If we did win it, it would be great to win, and I would bathe in it, and I would get
your
at those Liverpool fans
mad,
like they'll get
yeah.
at us. I will bathe
sit
in it.
Sit down. You want to win this league, and you can't even come to Old Trafford, the worst United side in 30 years. Sit down.
Exactly. But people always say, "Oh, there's an element of acting with me," which there never is. But there would be on Sunday. Because I would go for
it
big time, but in my heart I would know this is probably a bad result for us and they're still going to win the league, because the only way we can beat them is the way Stoke would beat them. You know, it won't be in the way that we want it to be. It'll be a very, very much, and I hope it happens, of course, but it'll be very, very short term. And I just want to read this while I've got it. It was 1999 that we drew with Liverpool 2-2, and we had Beckham, Scholes, Keane, York, Cole, Neville, Irwin, Johnson, Stam. So it was our 99 treble winning team. The Liverpool team had Matteo, Arsong, Steve Staunton, Phil Babb, Ince, Karl-Heinz Riedler, Leonardson. An absolutely shit team.
When you read it like that,
Brad Friedling goal.
Our team is that.
And they got a draw. And that's what I mean. This is where I think people are going wrong with this. Oh, Liverpool are going to win. We mustn't fall into that gap, that trap as United fans, because it doesn't matter how shit the team is. The enormity of the game and the fact that it's Old Trafford should make it.
Yeah.
We should win that game. And I know that doesn't really make sense, but that's what a derby is, especially like this. The problem is, do you trust our players to treat it
this is what
like
I'm
that?
Saying, Mark.
And that's
this
the
is
problem.
What I'm saying.
Or do you trust
saying,
our coach
man.
To be able to coach them to do that? You know?
There you go. There's so many factors this time around,
But we should get, you know, in a normal situation, we should be going
normal.
Into this game getting something. But
this
it just shows how far
normal.
We are.
We are in our worst period in 30-odd years. We cannot buy a win. We cannot score more than one goal. We are in shit street. It stinks of a Man United 1-0 win. Like, De Gea injured. Like, you know how football is. But
oh, I hope it is, though.
If you're being, like, literally looking at where we are at the moment, and if it plays out like that, where we are at the moment, like we all talk about, because you know what it is, we always talk about passion and like, and then like sometimes we'll go, but just get real, take the emotion out of it, look at where this squad are, because that's like people saying, oh, we'll just keep going the way we are, passion, play for Man United, play for the badge. There's loads of times we go, fuck that, have you seen, look, it's not even enough to beat Newcastle, it's not enough to beat Rochdale. Like sometimes you've got to take the emotion out of it and think it's just the 11 players against the 11 players in this moment. And I know the atmosphere won't tell us that, because everyone will be up for it. And the players will be up for it for like the first 5-10 minutes. But then once it, like you said, it goes flat after that, it just becomes a normal game. You see it in derbies. You've seen derbies go flat, where it's like they don't play the occasion because they are still 11 men against 11 men on the pitch. And if they're not in a good moment and your confidence is down, sometimes it's not enough just to go look down at the left side of your chest and say, that's the Man United badge there. Look around, 75,000. Ah, fuck it. Now I'm going to go and get the ball and do a mad thing and score. It's not enough. It's not. Because we're shit. So it would be so uncharacteristic for us to get a result. I hope we do. I really do. I just can't see it.
Yeah. And it'd be interesting to see what happens afterwards if we don't. But That sort of feeds in quite nicely. I saw something on Twitter today from United fans saying that if we get Mandzukic and Christian Eriksen in January, that'll be superb for United. I thought it was a joke. I did. I thought, you know, why is buying a 34-year-old Peter Crouch great for United? And why is buying another midfielder who downs tools and is spineless when things don't go his way good for United? But I think, again, we're back into the flip-flop world where as long as we buy something, that's fine. Where do you sit on this? Because if I said to you Mandzukic and Eriksen in January, or no money spent in January, we wait till the summer, we take this season for what it is, and you maybe get a Maddison or, and somebody like that with more long-term vision.
It depends on our board, man, because...
But what about you? What do you think? What would you rather do? Because for me,
Eriksen, I'd have.
Yeah, because you know what about Eriksen? But look at Eriksen this season. Is that not just another Sanchez scenario where we as United fans go, oh, he's got a good reputation, he's a good player, but we're not actually looking at the now? And the now is, if you speak to Spurs fans, he's abysmal. His head's not in the right place.
I think that's because he's not in it.
That's surely a warning sign. What if he comes to United, he does well for 18 months, and then oh, he's not getting the contract he wants, or you know, he falls out with somebody. It's just
every transfer is a gamble, isn't it? And I look at our midfield, and we need an attacking midfielder. And then if you look at the pros, Eriksen is a proven attacking midfielder in this league. He's in bad form at the moment. I get it. I know it's hard for us because of the Sanchez thing, so we don't want to go anywhere near it. But every transfer is a risk. Every transfer. We got Memphis Depay thinking he was going to be the best thing since sliced bread from the Dutch league. Young, ready to go. It didn't work out. Like, we got Di Maria, proven. Real Madrid, didn't work. It happens. I get it. But with him, me personally, I don't think that stinks of a Sanchez thing. It could come back to bite me in the arse, I don't know. But my gut feeling is it isn't. The Mandzukic thing, I wouldn't go near that, me personally, because I think he's past it. You could argue that, well, he'd get more goals than Rashford. He's better technically than Rashford.
Well, you would. So maybe you should quit doing the fan cams, or, you know, just get Ollie to sub you off the last 10 minutes so you can get down in position and play 80 minutes. There you go.
I wouldn't have Mandzukic. I think... his one is...
he probably scored about as many goals as he scored at the Trust Retford end this season, actually. Considering you've got one in May.
Exactly. That's how many has he got? Yeah, one. Yeah. So I wouldn't get Mandzukic. I think he's past it. I think that is encouraging, the retirement home thing. Players are just coming, just, you know, if they got him on a 6-month deal, which they wouldn't, would that be something? Say on loan to the end of the season. Okay, maybe that could be, because then it's just another option because we're so light.
Yeah.
But to buy him, 2-year deal, whatever, big wages. Nah, but then when you enter into the 6-month thing, it's just really, really difficult. I mean, look, we did it with Henrik Larsson once, which was, that worked. But other than that, it could be another Higuain story. You know what I mean? So the Eriksen one, I would buy him. I would. He's more proven than Maddison.
The thing about Eriksen is that I wouldn't, and I think this is the brilliance of fan opinion really now, because I think there are some fans who are just, we've got to, you know, God, what's going to happen in January, Mark? You know, so all I get on the live show, what's going to happen in January? And I'm like, you know what I'm like? I'm like, fuck January, you know? Yeah. You know, I'm still thinking about the summer, that was the opportunity, why should I trust them in January? With Eriksen, I just think my mentality with United now is that it's broken, it can't be any more broken. We've just spoken about it with Liverpool, it's broken. Let's stop getting the sellotape out and trying to fix the broken mirror, and let's just throw that in the bin and start shopping again. And it might
take ages. Eriksen would be one more, though. We need more than that, like, because
we won't. I doubt we'd get Eriksen and Maddison.
No, but I'm saying to build on. It's like, because if you just put Eriksen just next to McTominay and next to Fred or next to Matt, it'd still be shit. We still need to build around that, and then it's whether they would in the summer to accompany that. I don't know, but.
I want United to get back to the top, and it's going to take a long, long time. Do I think that Eriksen gets United back to the top? No. I think Eriksen's
a player.
What,
with other players, you don't?
He's not a winner. He's a good player, but he's not a winner. And I think United, even if it means we've got to get worse to get better, I want to build a proper team. I'd take Bruno Fernandes every day of the week over Eriksen because he's an up-and-coming player and I think he's more consistent. All right, there's a gamble there because you come in from a league abroad. But when I look at Eriksen and I think his performances recently have been shit, that would worry me. I don't think he's going to get any better because I think he's 27 coming up for 28. I don't think he even wants to come to United. He had an opportunity in the summer and he didn't.
Well, yeah, so they're all different questions. I don't think he'd actually come, but if you're asking me, would I get him?
Like, our board would. You're right about our board. Our board 100% will, because they don't factor in any of this. They just think, oh, let's spend some money. He's cheap. And that's the other thing. He's cheap. He will be cheap because he's only got, in January, they only have 4 months left on his contract. So you'd probably get a player of Eriksen's quality for 20 million, 25 million.
So is that, I know we talk about gambles and we don't want to be in a situation where we're gambling, but I see that, well, that's 5 million more than Daniel James for someone who...
I think Liverpool or Man City would go, what's 20 million? Let's get him.
Yeah, well, United would go, squads.
Oh, he's 20 million. We haven't got to spend 80 on Madison. Do it. 60 million for you. Let's share it out, Ed. And that's what, you know, United don't do bargains and go, well, we've saved some money there to spend there. As we saw in the summer, ooh, Dan James, 15 million. It wasn't like, ooh, Dan James, 15 million. We were going to spend 80 on Sancho. We've now got another 65 to spend. It's like 15 million on Dan James. We'll pocket the rest. So my mentality is, I know we're a rich club. I'd rather we spent the money on the players that we need rather than looking at things like cheap, risk, this, that, and the other. I mean, there's always an element of risk, but I'll be happy if we don't spend any money in January. I would. I hate the January transfer window. I don't think you can do good business in the January transfer window, and I'd rather wait till the summer, because then it just highlights what we said at the start of this season, that the summer that we've just had wasn't good enough.
And they're already trying to rectify it by saying we will look to spend in January. Yeah, exactly. The only way the January thing can kind of work is if, when Solskjaer was saying about we just didn't get the right one or whatever, and they had something there, but they just didn't have the time to do it.
If it's a Bruno Fernandes, yeah.
Yeah.
If it's a Maddison, yeah.
Yeah. But I don't think those deals wouldn't, I can't envisage those have been part done to say we'll pick this up in January.
No.
I don't think we was in a position.
I think Mandzukic was.
Well, that's what, apart from him, but that again stinks of, nah, he didn't want to come then. Like the Dybala thing, it's like saying, "Well, we're going to go and get Dybala in January." Like, he didn't want to come then. It fell through, and then now he's either not playing at Juve, and he's realised now he wants to come. Nah, fuck that.
We need midfielders.
And I think that's what the Mandzukic thing would be. It would stink of United finally giving into the wages that they didn't want to give into in the summer, because we're in shit streak, and actually we shouldn't have let Sanchez and Lukaku go. It stinks of panic to me, especially for a player that I don't see any longevity in. I don't see it.
I'll tell you what's interesting, actually, I wanted to put to you, because I just want to talk about Solskjaer for a couple of minutes. A few people have been saying that if Ole Gunnar Solskjaer wasn't a Manchester United legend and he was just the Mulder manager, would he get any job in the Premier League or even in the Championship?
Nope, he wouldn't.
And I think we'd all agree no on that. But I think one of the strengths you've said is that, you know, maybe he's a director of football. We've had that chat in the past. But you know what? I was thinking about this week, and that's the great thing about the international break. Mandzukic sort of prompted me to think like this. Mandzukic was a very big target for Mourinho the summer before last. Right? Harry Maguire was a target for Mourinho the summer before last. Dan James was recommended by Ryan Giggs. Wan-Bissaka this week, they spoke about the scouting process over the last 12 months for a right back. So what player has Ole Gunnar Solskjaer actually signed? Because we know that Mandzukic and Maguire were on United's radar before, long before Ole. We know that Dan James was recommended by Ryan Giggs, and Wan-Bissaka we've been scouting for over a year. So, you know, I think when you think about it, the one thing Greenwood that we say that's good about Ole is, oh, the signings. And yeah, he's got to take some responsibility for that. But this is a guy who was in Norway a year ago. He gets parachuted in to do a job. And then we all start thinking, whilst doing that job, he's gone, get me Maguire, Wan-Bissaka and Dan James. He hasn't done that. It's not him who's done that.
You're not giving him low ratings for that?
No, I give him some. I think, you know, a bit like, you know, when you... When you're on your bloody dating apps and you skim through the ones you like and you bin the ones you don't, I'm sure he's been presented with those players and he's made the decision. But I don't think he walked in and went, I want Maguire, Dan James and Wan-Bissaka. I don't think that's what's happened. I think they were already within the United radar and he's looked at the radar and gone, yeah, I'd like those.
Yeah, I think I don't see him being ruthless and saying out of nowhere where they weren't talking about it already, go and get this player, go and get that.
Well, we'll ask Ryan Giggs about Dan James next week anyway.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, the Dan James thing, it's his mate, isn't it? So if I would just called him up and said, listen, man, this lad's all right. You should go for him.
Well, he did. Well, Ryan Giggs was the one about Martial as well.
There you go. So, yeah, it is a weird one. It is a weird one. But I still stick by what I said, man. There's not much positivity right now. Not many things you can look at and go, do you know what, that was a good decision. But one thing I do rate Ole for is how he approached those first two games this season. I know it's only two games and then it went to shit. I know it. But I'm just saying, because I said it at the time and I still stand by the comments, he did show a way that he kind of wanted to move away from the stale. He did. It's all gone wrong, don't get me wrong. And
he still picked a very defensive lineup, though. He still played a 4-2-3-1.
The lineup, yes. And don't get me wrong.
I remember after the
Chelsea game, or at the Chelsea game, I remember tweeting, we can't ask for every single thing in one go, but I'm happy with that. I wanted to try and pick some positives out of it. And when I saw that first team sheet against Chelsea, I did say, do you know what? He surprised me, because I did think Smalling would be in there somewhere. Jones, I thought Young would be playing. Matic would be playing. Mata would be playing. Do you know what I mean? It was Martial in the nine. You know, Dan James was on the bench that game, but it was, what was it? Rashford on the left. He started on the right, was it Lingard?
Pereira started.
Pereira started.
Yeah, I think it was Pereira, Pogba and McTominay, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And then Lingard probably was off the right. Yeah, or off central. The right.
And then how he let go of the players, I was like, at least he's trying to come away from that. What I will say is that as soon as the shit hit the fan, he just reverted back into a shell. That is the biggest scare for me, and that stinks of panic.
The funny thing is about that Chelsea game, and I think we can all openly admit it, and I was saying it when I was talking to the Liverpool lads yesterday, because they were quite surprised because they hadn't seen the game. I said, the funny thing about the Chelsea game is, and you can check our fan cams, is we easily could have lost that game. Easily. And they were like, what? You won 4-0? I went, oh, mate, we were clinical, but they should have been 2-0 up at half-time. They were definitely the better team. We did deserve to win, but 4-0 flattered us.
And we haven't created more than four chances in the game since.
No.
More than two chances, more than three chances or whatever. Like, you know what I mean? It's been dire since then. The first half against Wolves was okay, but for how dominant we were, I remember us talking afterwards. We were saying, for how dominant we were against Wolves in the first half, we should have been probably two up.
Yeah.
Because we only really had, there was the Lingard chance where he missed the header from close. And then obviously Martial's was a great goal. But then the second half was just abysmal. We just let Wolves come straight onto us with one tactical change. And that's where the wheels started falling off, because he had the perfect opportunity to give us confidence there. And I know people can say, yeah, but Pogba would have, you know, if he would have scored and that, because even after Wolves scored, they didn't do anything after that. They didn't. We managed to kind of get back into the game.
Well, Pogba won the penalty, didn't he?
Again, Pogba and Martial link up.
That's
it. I'm not just going to go down this whole argument, Pogba this and Martial that, but they are two most creative players. And they've shown up time and time again.
Both black players.
Yeah.
You know where I'm going to go about this?
Yeah,
We'll talk about this. The racism in Bulgaria. Mm. We've spoken about it on a podcast before. As I say before, I always find it a difficult thing because I'm a white man and I'm not going to be a victim of racism. And therefore, I think to say anything, I think it's one of the few things in life where you can have an opinion on it, but your opinion's more important because you are actually a victim of this. It's a bit like if you've been abused as a child or whatever like that. You can say it's wrong, and you can do everything in your power to stop it. But if you've not been a victim of it, then you don't know what the full impact of it is. And I think that's good. That's a good way of putting it. But one thing I wanted to ask you was, do you think it would have been more powerful if England had just walked off and not played that game? And when you look at the fallout from it, you know, Bulgaria manager sort of trying to push it under the radar a little bit. And
we would have done that anyway. And that's the thing. I don't, to answer your question, I don't. There are, look, we can't tell those players what they should and shouldn't do. That's the first thing, because they're in the position, They're the ones that at every touch of the ball, they hear monkey chants. If Raheem Sterling or Tyrone Mings or Marcus Rashford or Tammy Abraham or whatever black player it is at that point, or player of colour, decides, do you know what? What if one of them would have just lost their heads and walked off? I would not be saying, you're a disgrace, you shouldn't have done that. That's their decision, because it is a personal thing. You know, it isn't, not all black people have the same opinion on this. And I think that's what a lot of people need to realise, is that all black people obviously feel that this is an issue and want this to be eradicated. But in terms of the way of dealing with it, like, I think that it was brilliant that they carried on. For me, I don't think that being oppressed this long as a race, we've got anywhere by giving in. When Martin Luther King was getting death threats and all this stuff, did he just go, I'm not turning up to that speech, that rally today, I'm just not going to go, I'm going to show them that they can't? No, he didn't. Did Malcolm X do that? No, he didn't. So did Rosa Parks think, I'm just not going to go on that bus because I know what's going to happen? No, she didn't. So for me, I like the fact that we're showing, mate, you can say what you want, you can do what you want, you're still holding a 6-0 hiding, and we're doing what we set out to do, because you, minority, which is, it is a minority, it's important to remember that, cannot stop us. I like that personally. Some people, I saw a guy on a Talk Sport saying, you know, you got to be a pioneer, and you know, change doesn't come easy, and I get that, and that's a whole different argument, and you know, that's for other people to, if they believe on that, they should have walked off. But you know, you're talking about you look what the Bulgarian manager said. If England would have walked off, right, if England would have walked off that pitch, and the game got postponed, and then obviously we got the 3 points, what do you think the Bulgarian manager is going to be sitting in a press conference saying, yeah, I did hear all the racism? It didn't matter either way, did it? Didn't. For me, the protocol is wrong though, because the protocol actually sends out a message, and I said it on Five Live when they asked me to go on there. If you're in a club, Mark, yeah, and you punch someone in the face in a nightclub, you're getting thrown out straight away. They don't go, I tell you what, you've punched him once, mate. If you punch him again, I'll come back and have a word with you, because it's the second time. Then if you punch him again, I'll throw you out the club. They don't do that. So what you're actually saying with a three-step rule is that, go on then, you call me a black C-U-N-T once, that's not too bad. Call me a black N-word the second time, I'll let you off. The third time, mate, you're pushing it. What kind of message is that?
Yeah.
What message is that? And I think that is the problem. And I think if it was a one-step thing, I think the pressure would be off the players, because I also made a comment sort of saying that you're also subconsciously putting a pressure onto the players that makes them think, is this the first time? Let's see how it goes. You're giving them that option. Let's just see how it goes. In the heat of the moment when you're playing, and I think if they knew it was the one-step rule, I think maybe they might just be like, yep, right, we're gone. Or take it out of their hands. Because when you're thinking with emotion, when you're thinking, when you're actually there, like I said, not all of them would think it, but some players would just think, I'm just here to do my job, they're not going to hold me down, I'm going to keep going. If the protocol was five stops, they would just keep exhausting it. So I think the protocol is wrong, it sends the wrong message. It's condoning racism twice, but not three times. That's what you're saying. And you wouldn't do that in real life. If you called someone the N-word in real life in your place of work or anywhere in the street,
yeah, be gone.
That's it. You wouldn't go, mate, if you call me that another two times, mate, I'm going to have to report you to the police. You wouldn't say that. It's bollocks. So that's where I stand on it. And I want to echo, though, that is not the opinion of all black people. There are a lot of black people, or white people, who think, nope, they should have packed up, should have walked off. I heard Ian Holloway talking about it, saying it's disgusting, the game should have been abandoned, and they should have just walked off.
I think it's great how many people are passionately against it, because that's the way it should be. Jordan Henderson tweeted something about it, and then people said, yeah, but he was wearing a t-shirt for Suarez 7 years ago. And I quoted it back and said, yeah, you know, that whole Suarez thing, Gerrard wore a t-shirt. They're idiots. As a club, from top to bottom, idiots. Whether they'll ever admit that or not, I don't know. But I'm willing to say it's irrelevant, because we're 7 years down the line, and if you don't learn and educate, you can't... I think too much of society is like, oh, look at what you did 20 years ago. Look at what you did 7 years ago. Like, my grandparents were racist in the 60s because racism was allowed. In the 80s at school, jokes were floating around because it was allowed. It wasn't right, but it was just a different time. you do those jokes now, you say racist things now, and you will be absolutely exposed for it, which is right. And that's education. So you cannot be like having a pop at Henderson for a t-shirt from 7 years ago when he actually is now putting a message out that this is not acceptable, because that is education. The people who are the problem are the people who are still doing it. The people who are doing it now are like, you're an idiot, you're an absolute imbecile. What you're only doing it because you're angry and bitter, and you're doing it because you want to annoy and humiliate those people with vulgar language. So that needs addressing. I don't know how we address it. I think, and we were mentioning black people because it is black footballers, unfortunately. We don't have enough Indian, British players or Pakistani or Mexican or wherever they're from.
It's all minorities, yeah. It is
black footballers. And that's why we say it, because racism isn't just against black people, as we know. But it's very important that the decision-making and the message comes from the black footballers, whether it's the England players or whatever, because, as I say, as a white person, it angers me, it frustrates me. At my age, I've been through that education process. My kids, fortunately, won't have to go through that. It's just unacceptable in modern day to be like that. And that's progress. But what I would do, I mean, it's very difficult from an Eastern European point of view, because I think that they are, a lot of them, just uneducated idiots. But in this country, it happened with the riots. When we had the riots in Birmingham, people were like looting shops, nicking a TV. You'd normally get a slap on the wrist. They were sending them to prison for a year, because it was just like, this is disorder on our streets. And if you're involved in it, I don't care whether you're a teacher, whatever, because there was all sorts of people doing that, whether it was London, Birmingham, Manchester. They all got strict sentences. And I think within football grounds, what I would like to see is any proven racism, whether it's the one who did it to Sterling last year, you are either going to prison for a month or you're paying a £10,000 fine towards the Kick It Out campaign. And that fear is proven through society. Fear will solve a problem. And that is what needs to happen in this country in relation to it. You know, you've got to scare these racists away.
They've got to feel consequence, man.
They're too comfortable. And there isn't. I don't know what that guy from Stamford Bridge got, but
he just got a lifetime ban.
Yeah,
from
fuck
Chelsea.
That. He should have been in prison or a £10,000. I ain't got 10,000. Off you go to prison for a month.
And like you're saying, we've still got this problem in our own country. Like, don't get it twisted. Like, it's highlighted because it was in Bulgaria and it's a foreign country. So as England, let's all beat them down. Racist, this, that, and the other, mate. It is happening in England on a daily basis. So you only got to look to the last couple of months, back to the Sterling thing, where it really just kicked on, where we got it in our own country. We've got it. And there's this thing that, like, certain racist people do, and it's like, you know what? If that black player plays for my team, it's all right because he's my black player. But then when he plays for someone else, then he becomes a black this or you black that. That Chelsea fan who's racially abused Sterling, he didn't do that to Drogba. He probably did when he missed a chance, but that's my black player. Do you know what I mean? And that, I think within football, I see a lot of that. I see a lot of, I hear a lot of it. Like, I'm not going to paint this picture and play the race card of like, oh, every game I go, you know, I've heard fans say, you black this, you black that. I haven't. But when I've heard fans say to like Pogba, like if he gives the ball away, you French twat, I've heard that. I've heard that. That's racist, you know? And I think a lot of these guys try to justify, could be women as well, try to justify their anger, like on a player through a misplaced pass or a shot that went into row Z. Like, it's just a football match. And I think that is a representation of what they think outside of football.
Yeah.
Because how could you possibly say that over somebody kicking a ball over a crossbar? How is that?
And that's why it's an education thing, because you don't know what the background of that person is.
You don't.
You don't know what they've been brought up to.
Well, you can guess what it is. If that's their views, you can guess. You know? So, look, I think we're a long way off eradicating it. And it might sound defeatist. I don't think we'll ever get to a point where it's completely eradicated. There'll always be, because we're a human race and we're so diverse with how we think and how we feel and what we think is right, and the history books are there, there are always going to be people who pick up them history books and read it and go, what, these black people came and we used to treat them like that? And no, they should be down there. This world's white. This world's this. This world's... There's always going to be people who pick up history and perceive it as that. But we have still got to keep going and keep trying to minimalize that, keep making it dilute until it tries to eventually wash out, because, you know, it, like you said, that's where the education comes from. So, yeah. That won't be the last racist incident throughout the season, I guarantee.
No. And as I said, I think from an English point of view, we do need stricter.
We do.
And I think that's one of the things as well that it's like, you know, it's something I hope doesn't happen, but I do think you get some very frustrated, let's say, black people, because we're talking about black footballers who sort of lash out a little bit, and it gets a little bit, you know, that they're like, you know, they'll have a go at people for like coming up with solutions, but they think they're just playing lip service to it, and then you start to get, you know, frustrated arguments between people who are meant to be sorting it out. I think I don't know how you do it. That's the problem. I think that's what was said on TalkSport yesterday. But I just think that it needs to be dealt seriously. And I think chats about lifetime bans and things like that, it's not going to do it. It's not going to do it. I think it needs, you know, proper punishment. And the best, I thought the way that this country dealt with the riots was spot on. You know, they went for maximum sentences on things like nicking a loaf of bread, because it was like, it was impactive. And I think that's what football needs to do. I think if you are caught being a racist in a football ground, then, you know, off you trot, you pay a massive fine, or you can go down the
steps.
But that's
it. And also, like, there's other bits of discrimination that don't even, like, we hear a lot about racism because it's in the news, but there's discriminations against
women,
there's discrimination against being homophobic, and these things aren't championed. Like, you've got like gay pride and things like that to champion that. You've got
well, you imagine if you had a gay footballer. This is crazy. We're going off on a tangent. Maybe we can talk about it another day.
Yeah,
but the reality is, statistically, there will be a percentage of footballers who are gay.
Yeah, 100%.
And if one of them come out in the Premier League, you know. Race, if you think like racism's bad, and it is bad, I'm not saying it's not bad, I'm saying, like, you know, it's a problem, but it's fortunately it's not happening every week. Imagine if old
homophobia is
the United player rolled up at I'm not even going to say the ground because it's unfair on whatever ground I pick,
but
a United player rolls up to an away ground and he's openly gay,
there's going to be prats in that crowd saying things that, the same with women in football, women commentating now, women getting a look in and stuff, they're getting a rough time. Even women just having an opinion on football, like they get crucified. Like we've seen it when we put videos up, or whatever. In the comments, you just got idiots just chatting shit, and it's wrong, man. We've got so many problems in society from human beings, which, like you said, it's going completely off topic, and it could be a whole different podcast. But it really does piss me off, man. And it isn't just the racism; it's just discrimination in general. You know, it really gets to me, because I'm someone who just tries to get along with everyone, regardless of race, colour, creed, sexual preference, all of that. And you just still get people out here that are gender driven, race driven, sexual orientation driven. It's just, it's pathetic, man.
Good podcast. I hope you've enjoyed it. Make sure to give us a star rating on whatever podcast form you're on. Leave us a review. Obviously, every week now, there's loads of other ones you can listen to as well. But thanks, everyone, for listening. And cheers for coming on Flex.
Yeah, again, man. Thanks for listening, guys. We keep going with this and keep pushing. So let's try and get this unforeseeable win against Liverpool.
Yeah, big week ahead. It'll be interesting to see what we're talking about next week. Thanks, everyone.